So namaste, and welcome to all that have shown up today. Once again, we've got a full room. We're running out of room. Also, we were going to go look at Brigetta's house. Yeah, do you know how many bedrooms that was? It's four bedroom. Okay. I don't think she's going to be here today. I think she's going to be away for a couple weeks, and then we'll see it when she gets back. But the good place is, it would be a wonderful place for a retreat center. It's out on the water. Every view from the place is of the water. No sound out there except for the wild, the animals going by and stuff. The drawback is, it's a two-hour drive from Seattle. It's across the bridge, across where, by what area?
Narrows Bridge.
The Narrows Bridge. You have to go down and cross the Narrows Bridge.
Harbor.
It's past Gigs Harbor. So you know where it's at, Key Peninsula. So it's nice area. I don't know what she's going to want to rent it, what she would rent it to us for, but... So I wanted to run it by people here who would be willing to come out there because it is a long drive. But the good thing is coming out there once a week, you'd get away from the city for a while and just be able to spend some time out there, you know. So all three sides of the house out on a little point, I guess. So, yeah, it's supposed to be really nice, really, really a nice place. So how many would be willing to make that drive out there for the satsangs and stuff? You wouldn't be able to. I think, yeah, we would have somebody be able to take you. That would be possible. So how many would be able to come? Okay, 1, 2. So, almost everybody. The bridge is... Okay. Good deal. So, most everyone would be willing to do that, which is excellent. And it would be a nice place for you to come out. If you got time, you know, during the week, just come and hang out and get some time away from... You might move in. You could do that, too. It would be nice to have, you know, somebody else living there that could help to take up some of the slack. That would be really excellent if we had somebody that would be willing to do that. So that's another thing to look at. 'Cause I do need some help. Would need some help out there. So if somebody was willing to move in as well, that would be a good thing. So that's what's on the agenda. And here comes Miss Roddy in the lap, so it must be time to begin satsang proper. Yeah, I see you. My little munchkin. Ah, and there's Sonja, just in time. So if you want to go ahead and pause this. So we'll continue on with satsang. First question is, what are some ways to spur creativity? First of all, by doing meditation, allowing the mind to still, and then going within that heart center and allowing it to move you forward. Spend more time out in nature, spend more time connecting with things. It depends on where your creativity, what area you want it to flow in, but the more still and centered you are, the more that it can have a chance to blossom. okay, and into something that would be beneficial to mankind versus going creativity out of hectic and frenetic. There's a lot of hectic and frenetic type of creativity out there, but we need to bring in a little bit more balanced type of creativity. Okay. So yeah, continue with meditation. You know, bring in some nice, you can listen to some nice music with it or spend some time out in nature or, you know, opening that way, especially heart center. Okay. Oops. I've got questions jumping out of the bowl today. What are some of the major signs that one is moving ahead along the spiritual path? Like witnessing from outside the body, kundalini, etc. Unfortunately, sometimes you can be moving forward and you can hit a very rough patch and think that you're regressing. It doesn't mean you're regressing. It just means that you've gone up to another layer and you're stirring the mud in that layer. Okay? And then sometimes you reach a plateau and you think that I'm not going anywhere. But sometimes you need to reach a point of a little bit of stillness and allow that to just start to relax and give you time for the next push. Okay, so it's very important when you get to this, either where it's stirring up more things and you think that you're regressing, to realize that it's actually progressing because you're just starting to connect with another layer that needs to be cleaned out. Or if you are in that time where you say, well, I'm not having phenomena, I'm not having this, I'm not having that. This is once again not looking at what someone else is getting or what you've heard it's supposed to be like, because everyone is different. Everyone has their own timing. Everyone has different things that they need to confront or look at or release. So if it appears that you're in a dry spell, just continue on with your meditation. Continue on with your mantras. Continue on with your spiritual practices it's given. You can ask for different texts if you want to read something that would be beneficial for where you're at the moment in your growth. Okay. The main thing is to relax with it. Relax with it. This is a part of a path of learning again to surrender and not being in doership. I need to do this and I need to see progress. Okay? It comes in its timing. Just like the earth, we have cycles and seasons. We have spring, we have summer, we have autumn, we have winter. Some are more productive than others. Okay. So this takes patience all in its timing. Infinite patience. But the more you can relax into it, the better it is. Okay. But don't have the expectations that it needs to be one way or another. Got more questions. This looked like one big question. No, we got a whole bunch of little ones. Okay, well, we'll drag one of these puppies out. Oh, okay. Tell her. Yeah, just put it over here for now, and then we'll pass it out. We'll pass it out. Does it smell really good? Roddy went over to inspect it. She's going, oh yeah. So I guess there will be goodies with tea this afternoon after the break. Can you elaborate on the witness state? Witness state is a little bit when you're pulled back and you're more aware of what's going on, patterns that are coming up, without being so caught up in the action that you can't see what is taking place. In witness state, you're able to see what is coming up and comment on it as it's coming up. You're more able to watch your life as it comes up as a play and comment on it as it's happening. That would be witness state. Yes.
Is it also, or does it also have a component of, if you want to self-examine something, that you can ask?
Yeah. Yeah. Because at that point you're able to see what's happening. And I've given this example so many times before, and I'll give it again. I was in witness state, was in India, had taken a rickshaw somewhere, auto rickshaw, got out, and the guy wanted to charge me, like, you know, 10 times the going rate. And I was at that point screaming memes at the guy and watching myself at the same time and commenting on it, going, well, now this is really stupid. It's not like you can't afford it. You know, why are you so upset about such a ridiculous thing? And meanwhile, I'm still going, screaming at the guy at the same time, you know. Of course, it didn't stop the action, didn't stop the feelings, but I was able at that point to recognize what was taking place. So that's the beginning of witness state, where you're able to see what's happening, but there's enough distance at that point that you're able to comment on it at the same time and really look at, you know, where these things are starting to take place from and patterns that are arising and coming up. Whereas usually, if you're not in a witness state, what happens is you're so engaged in it that you don't really get to reflect on it till much later down the road, if even that. And by then it's already passed and you've built up some other colorization around it already. But if you are in witness state, you can question it as it's taking place. Okay. And you just feel a little bit, on one level, removed from the action as it's taking place. Okay. The body's engaged, but the witnessing aspect is a little more stilled at that point. Why do my emotions go to such extremes? Emotions go to extremes because we're still caught up in the mind and the past things. Okay. Yeah, a lot of times when we start getting work done or something, it brings up a lot of emotional things and you start discharging. And when you start becoming a little more aware, things seem to be a lot more pronounced. Okay? As you start watching things, once again, you're starting to go into a little bit of that just before witness state where you're now, though, more aware of it. Like if you're sitting in Vipassana and these things are coming up and you're watching them, where you start to do meditation and you're going, why is my mind not still? Why is it more active than it was before? Well, it's not that it's more active. It's just that you're starting to become aware of it. So when you start to become aware, then you start to feel more, you start to cognize more. You're not covering it over with so many things. The coverings are starting to come off. Okay? You're starting to become more in tune with what's taking place. Okay, can we use this?
I don't mean to be a mean person, but a lot of meanness is coming out in me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just are, at this point, you're not covering it over with so many things. Okay, before, you know, you were covering it over. You were covering it over, so you weren't as aware as you are now. But it'll adjust out. It'll adjust out. It will adjust out as you go along. What is most important about facing addictions? What's most important is to face it. In most addictions, you're not facing whatever's there. You're using the addiction to cover it over so you don't have to look. The first step out of addiction is being willing to see what's really there without covering it over and masking it with something. So once you stop and really start to look, and you're not masking it with something, this causes, again, a more feeling of emotions coming out, because you're actually starting to delve into why you're covering it up and why you're masking it. The only way to diffuse this is to be willing to look at it point blank and see that it comes out of some past drama, past something that's driving your life that's too hurtful or you know, you're trying to prove wrong or you're trying to run away from, one or the other. But when you really stop and face it point blank, then you can start to cut the knots that are binding you. You can start to find your way out. Can start to settle in and find out. Usually it's not the big boogeyman that you thought it was. At one point in the life, what's driving you may have been needed to be put in a place where you needed to have this in order to feel like you needed to survive. But now it's not working any longer. Now it's a hindrance. Okay. So now's the time to start to cut those threads and to start to come out. One step at a time. So again, in doing meditation and things, you can start to still and allow things to come up and look at them in a little more centered way. Okay. What are some ways to quiet the mindless chatter in the day? One way is to either do the mantra that you have. If you don't have a specific mantra, you can do Om. Rather than listening to the chatter, do the Om or do your mantra. Put your attention there. If you ignore the chatter for long enough, it will subside. It'll not be fed any longer. Okay. Another way you can do it is to do that balanced breathing. Continue to do the balanced breathing and allow that to relax. Or just look at nature. If you're in a workplace, put a picture of nature, something that's relaxing to you there. Take a moment break. Do the relaxed breathing. Do the Om or your mantra. Okay, it's a process. Chattering mind is not going to end immediately. It's a process. But if you put these keys and tools into effect, eventually the mind will still. The first time it happens, it can be quite astounding. The first time there's silence. But you reach eventually to realization, and that's what remains. It becomes the norm is to have the still mind. Okay. So this is where you're headed towards, to have that stillness that's always present. Then it doesn't matter what's coming up or what's going. There will still be a sense of stillness there. Even in the midst of sound, you will still hear silence. Okay. But it's in all things, it takes time. One step at a time. Use the tools. And don't be too hard on yourself. If you try to battle the mind, guess who's going to win? The mind. Because you're just giving it more energy. Put the energy somewhere else. Every so often when I lie in bed, a point of light will come from above down into my body. Have you heard of this? What does it mean? Yeah, I've heard of it. There's a lot of different types of phenomena that take place in the midst of the Kundalini journey. Don't try to look for a meaning for everything that's happening, you know. Just accept that it simply is and it's part of the journey. But neti neti, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. We don't hang on to the phenomena because phenomena is movement. Okay. It's all part of Shakti. It's all part of play. Just means that the energy around you is becoming more rarefied and you're becoming more attuned to more subtle energy. That's all. But, yeah. Points of light can come or you can feel other energy or, you know, a spirit guide or whatever. But still even that, not this, not this, not this. Okay. Yes, there are things in the universe that help you. But that's not the point of reference that you want to gravitate to. The point of reference is to come to know that still point that is God, that is the point of your own beingness. So the phenomena, it's fun, you know, it's interesting. But that's not the end all and be all. Okay. We want to get to that source where all of it's allowed to stem from. Why are people generally so obsessed with personal problems and so consumed with self-pity? How does one overcome these things, both in oneself and in others? Well, first of all, to realize that others need to take care of themselves. Okay? You can't do anything to change what others are focusing on or caught in until they're ready to come out of it. So the first one you need to work on is yourself. Okay? And see, when you're on your throne, and we've all been the queens and kings of our own pity party, and I was very good at being the queen of the pity party for quite a number of years. But you don't understand. My trauma is so much worse than anybody else's. But eventually it comes taking a stand and looking at the only one that's holding that residual in place is yourself. The event happened. It was long ago. But who holds it in place? The memories, who keeps that alive? Me, myself, and I, no one else. Okay. So once we start being cognizant of it, that most people are on a pity party and that we ourselves are on the pity throne quite often, then we can start to stop and look at it and say, what is this I that's holding this in place? What is this big me story? Is there something other than the big me story? Then you start to go into this self-inquiry, what is this I? Is it the body? What is mind? Am I the mind? Is there something other than mind? Then we start to question on a very deep level. That's when these knots start getting cut. But this has to come out of that cognition first within yourself. It can't just be done on a superficial level. This comes from a very deep level of finding out and really looking, what is this I? Not what am I? Because if you say, what am I? Then you're going to be looking, I'm a doctor, I'm a nurse, I'm this, I'm a that. It's not about what you are or what you've collected. It's what is this I? What holds this me story in place? And when the mind, the body, and the emotions are taken away, what's left? What's really there? Because if you're looking at the mind, if you're looking at emotions, then you can't be that. Okay? You're that which is aware of them. So what is this that that's aware of it? Find that. Find that. The me story has to do with an attachment to body and events, creates a sense of this me. But there's something beyond this me, something beyond this mind, something beyond the body, something beyond these emotions that makes all of these things possible. Find out what's that point of starting possibilities. When you get to that point, then you'll be able to help other people off their pity party thrones when they get ready. Help them abdicate. What does the white aura of the Satguru mean? Or how does it come about? It comes about when you've let go of conditionings, okay? There's nothing else being reflected in there. Nothing being held on to. You get a lot of different colors and auras depending on what people are working towards. Yellow is a lot of intellectual. Green is healing, a lot of, you know, other colors symbolize a lot of different things, but the white means that everything is in balance. It's all total balance. Okay? So that's why the Satgurus will have a white aura. Okay. There's also a color of a white aura that it's it depends on the color of white in the aura too. There can be one that's like a stress related type of a, if it's like a muddy type of a white as well. So you have to look at which level it's on. How do I know when I will be able to advance to initiation? When you feel you're ready for it? When it's something you think that it would be advantageous to your life, when you're ready to make that commitment to the path, then you speak with me on that. You request then at that time diksha. Okay. Diksha is pretty much open to most people. Okay. I don't really know of any I've turned away, except for one. I turned away one that wanted to take diksha only because just being around me, she would go into very heavy kriyas, and there is not a place for her to come at this time to process them. And where she's at now, it would not be advantageous for her to be going through really heavy kriyas. But most people that are ready, I will give initiation to. Absolutely. How can I lose the fear of making mistakes? This is a tough one for most people, fear of mistakes. If there's fear of mistakes, what happens? You start stagnating, you don't move. Causes you to be bound up. This is why I say this is a path of surrender, not doership. Fear of mistakes is one of doership. Okay, I'm going to do the wrong thing. It was very interesting when I was in the order. Okay, that's where I started out, in a Christian esoteric order. Father Blyton would very wisely put us in charge of something in which we had absolutely no training whatsoever. Why? Because we had to rely on spirit to get us through. Okay. There was no fear of making mistakes because you had absolutely no idea what you were doing in the first place. Okay. So you had to totally rely on it. I was the head carpenter. Trust me, I knew nothing about being a carpenter or locksmithing or anything that went with it. But when things needed to be done, you just got yourself out of the way and went on spontaneity, and it happened. What you needed to know was there. So the thing is to start to let go of the doership, of the I, and of training. Okay. Go more on intuition. And know that there's nothing that cannot be rectified, and maybe that mistake is there for a reason. Okay? So, in the end, maybe it's not really a mistake. People need to relax a bit more. Quit worrying about what the world's going to think about them, or how someone else is going to view, or how it's going to be judged. Okay, the world is going to judge. It's going to view. It's done it for centuries. It will continue to do it. So what? Okay, that's the world's problem. The one who's got the judgment, it's their problem. But we don't need to carry that. We don't need to make that a burden for ourselves. Okay. Just be who and what you are. Live your highest truth. Be transparent, be open, be simple. Simplicity. Okay? You can't ask for any more than that. And you'll find if you can do that and get the rest of this way out of the way, you're gonna have so much less of a burden to carry. Okay? Why to continue to carry so many burdens when it's not needed? Because that inner kernel of who and what you are really, minus all these coverings that we put into place, is perfect as it is. It's always perfect. Okay? We do not come from a flawed being. Everyone's essence comes from Godhood, from that God being. There's nothing flawed there, okay? It's always perfect as it is. infinite potential. Okay. So let go of this feeling of I'm going to do something wrong. Okay. Let go of the me. When there's no longer a me in place, there's only spirit. Okay. Move from there. To what extent are we responsible for our situation and circumstances? Are we ever just an innocent victim? When can we blame ourselves or blame others? When can we blame others for what happens to us? Well, you can try to blame others and remain on the pity throne. And if something happens by chance, let's just put it in there and say, okay, the world is done by chance. What good is blame going to do anyway if the world is only chance? If it's just chance, who are you going to blame? And are you going to blame yourself and you're going to blame someone else? What good would it do? Wouldn't do any good anyway. But if we draw experiences to ourselves, then again, who are you going to blame? In either way, what's the blame? And I've used this before many times in my lectures. I went through a lot of very traumatic things in my life. And at first I wanted to blame. Okay? And then I had a view of a past life, and I knew that what was happening in this life was connected to that life. Okay, it was something I didn't fulfill in that lifetime. So in this lifetime, I brought what appeared to be very, very traumatic situations that I found and encountered over and over and over and over and over again. And I found in it there was no one really to blame. It was a come to a point to start to really look to find out who and what I am and who and what I am not. Those situations came in to start that ball rolling, to look really deeply. Am I this body? Am I this mind? Am I these emotions? So it's a left-handed blessing. But if you look at it at the surface, it would be a horrible thing to endure. Okay? But there was no blame in it. At the time I was going through in it, there was a lot of blame and a lot of pity party. Why is this happening to me? What have I done to deserve this? Was I some horrible person? You know? And we come up with 1,000 scenarios. But if we can stop all those scenarios and see what's holding the pain in place from these past things, we see that the only one that's holding it in place is who? Me. Me, myself, and I. Why do we want to hang on to that? It's not going to change what's happened before. No matter how many times we wish it would change, it's not going to change. So all we can do is look at what's now. What's now is not that time back then. What's now is now. Okay. But start, use it as a starting point to start to question. What is this I? What's holding this in place? Where has it come from? And we'll find out that a lot of the things that we hold in a place from these past traumas were things that they become bondages to us, and they don't need to be there. Okay? They don't need to be there. So use it as a a point of reference to start to question, to start to cut away these layers. Okay. The things that start as bondages can be liberators in the end. Like that one, if you watch the video on the Vipassana, doing time, doing Vipassana, here these guys are in jail. And they started to do this Vipassana course in jail. And one of the guys actually made the statement, it was almost worth it going to jail just to do the Vipassana. So what was its start? A horrible thing, going to jail. Winding up freeing these people, really freeing them within themselves. So it doesn't matter whether they're confined there or not. Still, within themselves, they're free. And even if they had been on the street, they would have been more confined than they are now in the prison. So it's just the way that we look at these things. They can either be left-handed blessings in disguise, or we can take them to heart and not use them. Like the yin-yang symbol. Everything that we think is good has a seed of shadow in it, and every darkness has a seed of light. It's up to us to find out which one, which we hold to. Okay? What are some of the major obstacles that prevent one from moving ahead along the spiritual path? Most of the major obstacle is the mind and the ego. The ego, this me. Me wants to protect itself. Me wants to think it already has it. That's the main difficulty on the path, is the mind and this sense of self. Because this is what the path is there to break through. It's there to break through this sense of self that's binding. Okay? And that when you start to cut these things, this self starts to feel out of control. As you go through different layers, you're going to start to move into different states of awareness, different types of consciousness, and it's not going to feel like the norm. It's not normal. So you want to get back to what you feel is quote-unquote normal. No, but I'm used to being asleep. I don't want to wake up because that's not normal. Okay. It's like when you've got a limb that's asleep and it starts to wake up. What happens? You feel tingling, the lifeblood starting to come back into it. It's uncomfortable at first. Okay. When you start to wake up, it might be uncomfortable at first because it's not going to be that normal sleepwalking that you're used to. But the thing is just to continue forward. Because once you finally come to realization, you wouldn't trade it for anything. Because at that point, everything that you've had for bondages, depression, fear, lack, unsurety, they're gone, never to return. Never to return. And what remains is that center of calm. Doesn't mean that you become like a rock. Doesn't mean that at all, that you're emotionless. You still have emotions, in fact, even more intense sometimes, because they're pure emotions, but they're only momentary during that time. And when the event has passed, it's over. Okay? And that brings us up to the article I was going to comment on. And maybe we'll take a quick break. And then if you're interested, I'll go through this article and make a comment on it out of this publication, The Voice of Choices and the Blessings from the publisher, As Above, So Below. I read it this morning and I was just flabbergasted. But this is from the New Age community, so what can I say? It's we'll make comment on it in a moment. So if you want, we'll go ahead and take a break now.